Welcome to the Dietitian Connection podcast, a show about nutrition, dietitians, and their success stories. Through our conversations with nutrition leaders, we aim to inspire you, to connect you with like-minded colleagues, to innovate and push you out of your comfort zone, to create robust debate, to encourage lifelong learning, and to empower you to create more impact as a dietitian.
Dietitian Connection acknowledges the traditional owners of land and waters this podcast is recorded on. Welcome to the Dietitian Connection podcast. I'm Brooke Delfino from Dietitian Connection, and I'm an accredited practicing dietitian. This podcast is not and is not intended to be medical advice, which should be tailored to your individual circumstances. This podcast is for your information only, and we advise that you exercise your own judgment before deciding to use the information provided. Professional medical advice should be obtained before taking action. At least 60% of pregnant women in Australia have inadequate intakes of choline. That's a pretty concerning statistic, given that choline plays an important role in brain and spinal cord development during pregnancy. Today, we're joined by dietitian Sharon Natoli to learn about the importance of this really interesting nutrient, not just for pregnant women, but also infants and children, and how everyday eggs can help us meet our choline requirements. We'll also crack open the latest guidelines on introducing eggs to infants before diving into some creative culinary inspiration with these humble nutrient powerhouses. Sharon Natoli is an accredited practicing dietitian and the founding director of Food and Nutrition Australia, which was established in 1997. She's a well-respected nutrition advisor to some of Australia's leading food companies and research and development corporations. She's also the author of the book Food for a Better Future, A New Direction for the Global Business of Food. Food and Nutrition Australia provides nutrition advisory services to the food sector and is the nutrition service provider to Australian Eggs, a client they have worked with since 2004. Over the past 20 years, Food and Nutrition Australia dietitians have been instrumental in influencing the conversation and public health recommendations about the role of eggs in a healthy and balanced diet. Welcome to the Dietitian Connection podcast, Sharon.
Thank you, Brooke, and thanks for having me today.
And of course, a very big thank you to our sponsor today, Australian Eggs. Well, let's dive straight in, because we do know that good nutrition is vital for before, during, and after pregnancy. And we also know that pregnant and breastfeeding women do have increased nutritional requirements. Can you remind us what are some of the key nutrients that women need more of during this really important life stage and why?
Yes, well, most dietitians would understand, I guess, why women need more nutrients kind of across the board during this stage, because growing a new baby requires a lot of energy, a lot of nutrition. But specifically, folate is one that springs to mind that we'd be well aware of. The requirement for folate in pregnancy goes up by 50%, so by 200 micrograms a day. And that's needed, of course, for spinal cord development and also maternal tissue growth. Omega-3s are another one. So the long-chain omega-3s increase because they're critical for brain and eye development. So and we need an additional 25 milligrams a day. And iodine, and we know that quite a few women of childbearing age don't reach the iodine requirements anyway, and then it increases by an additional 70 micrograms a day during pregnancy. And iodine has an important role in brain and nervous system development, and also the health of the placenta as well. Iron would be well aware of course, that goes up fairly significantly, and that makes sense because we're having to produce a whole lot of, you know, more blood and more blood cells and so on. And protein, of course, because protein is a building block for all of our muscles, tissues, so on. And B12 increases by a small amount also, particularly because it's needed, when infants are born, they need to have some storage levels of B12. And B12 works together with folate in terms of the health of the spinal cord and the neural tube closure.
There's a lot of nutrients there. I think that lots of people would probably know about folate. but maybe not so much of those other, I mean, obviously dietitians would be aware, but I don't think everybody, you know, our patients and our clients certainly would know about a lot of these. And I particularly want to focus today on choline. Now, it's not a vitamin, it's not a mineral. Can you tell us what it is and why it's in the spotlight during pregnancy?
Yeah, choline is a what's called a phospholipid. And I guess as dietitians, you know, going back to our chemistry, it's just a lipid with a phosphate component on it. And choline, yeah, it's not a vitamin or mineral. It does have an adequate intake recommendation in the nutrient reference values. But it has a really important role as the precursor, particularly for the neurotransmitter acetylcholine, which is involved in nerve and brain functioning and memory. So important role in cognition, particularly during infancy and that time of development. And it's also needed as part of myelin, which is the, you know, the insulation around our nerves. And it's key in terms of being a component of cell membranes as well. So yeah, has quite a few important roles in pregnancy and infant development. And it's, yeah, one of those, I guess, substances that has kind of been flying under the radar a little bit, but we know in pregnancy it works together also with folate and vitamin B12 in terms of neural tube health and development, spinal cord development as well.
An incredibly important one. And, you know, I think such a good one for us to all be talking about, whether you're working with fertility clients or not, something we should all be talking about, especially if it's important for infants as well. Are people, I guess, specifically pregnant women getting enough choline in their diets? I'm guessing maybe not.
No, and the numbers are quite outstanding, really, I guess, is kind of in terms of the research that has been done. And there is a couple of research studies that have been done in Australia, one fairly recently in a cohort of South Australian pregnant women that found at least 60% of Australian pregnant women aren't meeting the adequate intake for choline at that stage of life. And another study done by the University of Wollongong a few years ago that found less than 10% of the population overall and less than 1% of pregnant women were meeting the adequate intake for choline. So whatever numbers you look at, yeah, the majority don't meet the requirements at that time of life. So it's something that, yeah, it's worthwhile, I guess, as dietitians definitely being aware of as something that is important for that particular stage of life. I mean, and throughout the life stages as well, for its role in cognition and brain development and memory and so on.
Yeah, definitely some work to be done here. How much do pregnant women need and what foods do we find it in?
Yeah, so the adequate intake for pregnancy is 440 milligrams a day. And that increases during breastfeeding up to 550 milligrams. So kind of going back to the question at the start, I guess, you know, choline is one of the substances that we have an increased requirement for at that stage of life. And so there's some research out of the US that shows it's actually very hard to meet your choline intake in pregnancy and for everybody without eating eggs because eggs are very high in choline. But other sources of choline include red meat, and there's some in nuts and legumes and dairy products as well. The research that was done by the University of Wollongong, which looked at food sources, found that eggs are the most significant contributor, contributing 17% of our average intake.
So eggs really are what we want, especially pregnant women, to be eating. But some women do avoid eating eggs during pregnancy because they think that they're unsafe. So let's talk about this very common misconception. Are eggs safe for pregnant women to eat? And are there any guidelines around how many eggs pregnant women should eat? Can you fill us in on what the latest evidence is around this?
Yeah, I guess it's interesting that it takes a while for, I guess, nutritional messages or, you know, where recommendations might change or you hear different things for that to get through to the population. And yes, eggs are safe during pregnancy. Of course, food safety guidelines come in there, kind of common sense. And recommendations are that for pregnant women, eggs should be cooked and, you know, not to have raw eggs during pregnancy, which is just to be eating foods with a lower, you know, kind of risk of salmonella and so on. So cooking eggs means, you know, they're cooked enough so that the yolk starts to thicken. They don't have to be hard boiled or anything. It's just cooked and not to eat things that contain raw eggs, like say chocolate mousse or, you know, homemade mayonnaise or what have you. But kind of on the point of, you know, women cutting out eggs or not having them, there's actually just coincidentally, just last week, a new study came out from the University of Southern Queensland, and they are following a group of children. They've been following them since 2004 and looking at maternal diets and the risk of overweight and obesity. And what they found in following this group of kids from being 2 years old in 2004 through to, you know, recently, is that for women who restricted egg intake in pregnancy, there was an increased risk that the children by the age of 14 to 15 years old would be overweight, so a higher risk of being overweight if women avoided eggs during pregnancy. And they found a similar association with fish as well. So eggs and fish and those two foods being foods that women may avoid because, you know, they're kind of that two of the allergenic foods, then actually you're better off. Well, it's an association, so it's that kind of research, but it's interesting to note. And the rationale may be that, you know, if you're not eating eggs or you're not eating fish, that maybe you're eating, you know, substituting maybe more processed foods or something.
Right. What else are you eating? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just an interesting observation. So it's kind of a reason to eat eggs. But the other kind of part of your question is how many eggs. There aren't any guidelines for the number of eggs to eat in, you know, like in a day or in a week. And so for pregnancy, the recommendation is similar to the rest of the population, which is to consider eggs like you would other protein-rich foods. So as part of that, you know, food group of meat and fish and chicken and so on, and to eat a variety over the week. But having said that, two eggs does provide 74% of the adequate intake for choline. So they're really useful, along with, you know, their omega-3 and all those nutrients I mentioned in the beginning are in eggs. So the omega-3s and the iodine, selenium, protein and so on, and vitamin D, which we kind of didn't touch on, but eggs are really high in vitamin D, so that's really useful during pregnancy as well, when we know that, you know, kind of 20 to 40% of the population have low vitamin D or suboptimal vitamin D status.
So plenty of reasons for women to certainly be eating them and no guidelines. What about for women with, you know, existing diabetes or heart health? Should they follow that same recommendations or are they sort of, do they need to limit eggs?
Yeah, so yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So when it comes to diabetes and heart health, so the Heart Foundation recommends up to 7 eggs a week. So, you know, still an egg a day, which I think from a nutritional perspective is really useful to include anyway. So, yeah, if in women who have existing diabetes or have high cholesterol levels, then yeah, up to 7. Otherwise, yeah, there's no specific kind of number, but variety is important. So yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting, that that research that you just spoke about with women who avoid or limit eggs, but then also you're saying they found the same for fish. And there's so many factors here, isn't there? Is it a food safety issue? Is it a what women feel like eating sometimes if they're unwell during pregnancy? I certainly think that, you know, reiterating that recommendation that eggs are safe when they're cooked or even just when the yolk has started to thicken, so they don't have to be absolutely hard boiled for women during pregnancy, because I know a lot of women that do avoid even poached eggs or, you know, things like that, that they might still be able to eat and enjoy and certainly get their intake of choline and other vital nutrients during pregnancy up. So that's a really, I'm glad we discussed that, and hopefully dietitians are able to then pass this information on to their clients and share that with them and help alleviate a little bit of that fear.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? That fear can get in the way, and it's about balancing that understanding of safety and that there's a low risk that eggs are going to have anything like salmonella anyway. Most likely, if you ate a raw egg, more than likely you'd be fine. And so it's not that all eggs, you know, kind of carry bacteria or anything. It's just, as we know, it's just that message gets out. And so, and we know that women are more motivated during that time. And so, you know, fear and all that sort of thing comes in. But yeah, just, I guess, fish and eggs, you know, both nutrient rich foods is making sure that we're balancing like safety and, yes, eat them.
Of course.
It's a bit like the infant, introducing eggs to infants, which is something we'll talk about. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about, once Bub is born, is choline an important nutrient for infants?
Yes, yeah, choline is an important nutrient for infants. The choline requires, so if we think about that first year of life when particularly, you know, women are breastfeeding, choline comes through in the breast milk, the intake, adequate intake for choline increases in lactation. That's the highest, you know, you need even more to support the continual growth and development of the infant in terms of the brain, the spinal cord, you know, the nervous system and so on. So, yes, yeah, continues to be important. And research does show that over those first 1,000 days of life, choline's pretty important to support that normal brain development, protecting the brain, particularly from any damage. So if the infant's exposed to alcohol intake, then choline plays an even more important role. And also might improve neural and cognitive functioning. And some research shows that, or has looked at maternal intakes of choline, and then by the time kids are 3 years of age, and shown that where mothers have had more choline or their diet's been supplemented with choline, the kids have fewer attention problems and less social withdrawal compared to like a placebo group.
Very interesting. So for all those new mums who suddenly crave those foods maybe they were limiting, like poached eggs. I know many women talk about they can't wait to have poached eggs once the baby is born. You know, they can obviously eat those during pregnancy, as we've discussed, but it's an excellent food and a very nutritious food for everybody, but for women especially during this really important time when they're breastfeeding. So we've clearly covered that eggs are a rich source of choline, but they are also one of the most common allergens. So if we're going to be talking about, you know, we've gone through the stages, we've gone through pregnancy, Bub has been born, there's lots of myths and misunderstandings about introducing allergens. And even for me as a dietitian, I have two young toddlers, you know, I still was a little bit nervous about what to do. Can you fill us in on what are the most up-to-date guidelines on when and how eggs can be introduced to infants?
Yeah, so the National Health and Medical Research Council infant feeding guidelines specifically says there's no evidence that delaying the introduction of solid foods beyond 6 months of age reduces the risk of allergy. So this is a general kind of solid food introduction, and that if you delay introducing solid foods after 6 months, that's associated with an increased risk of allergy. So that's kind of a broad statement. And then the Australasian Society for Clinical Immunology and Allergy, ASCIA, a bit of a mouthful, have more specific recommendations for eggs and allergenic foods. And what they suggest, and of course we've had a bit of a change, you know, sort of a bit of a flip, and I guess this is a similar situation with food safety, you know, like it's often up to us as dietitians to get these new messages out to people to alleviate their fears, but that Solid foods. So Askia says that solid foods should be introduced at around 6 months of age, but not before 4 months. That's so similar with NH and MRC. And that whole eggs, along with other allergenic solid foods, should be introduced in the first year of life. And that introducing cooked whole egg by around 8 months of age might reduce the risk of egg allergy in infants with a family history of egg allergy. But recommendations overall for eggs are the same for all infants, regardless of their family history of allergenic disease, which is pretty much to introduce eggs within that first year of life. And there may be some benefits to introducing them kind of by around 8 months of age in terms of if you have a family history of egg allergy. So, and then once they're introduced, it's useful to keep them included in the diet so that there's regular exposure. So regularly in the diet means around twice a week, roughly, so that you're maintaining kind of that tolerance. So overall, yeah, introduce eggs as part of the diet, you know, as a solid food anytime from around that 6 month point. And maybe if you've got a family history of allergy, do that by 8 months of age, at least within that first year, and giving them, you know, and following the general guidelines as you do with other foods, which is, you know, a small amount, kind of one of at a time, and see if there's any reaction. So, and cooked eggs.
Cooked eggs. It's clear to be cooked eggs. That makes it really nice and clear. I think one thing here was the wording is whole eggs, because sometimes we do see some parents introducing the yolk or the white. So the recommendations are here that the whole egg can be introduced at, you know, in the one go. There's no need to separate it or do one first or the other.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Excellent. Yes.
Lovely and clear. So yeah, but keeping that in mind, I guess, especially, you know, it's really the same advice for all those key allergens, and introducing them into infants. So another one for dietitians to reiterate to clients and guide them through that process, because it is a little bit daunting, I think, when you're starting out. It's a lot to consider with starting solids and just staying on top of the latest guidelines, because it does tend to change. So we often hear advice from generations before us on how it was done, but we, you know, can be guided by the latest evidence, which is fantastic.
Yes. Yes. I mean, yeah. And the research is showing more benefits more so from that earlier introduction than that, and no benefits from delaying So there was one meta-analysis which was published a few years ago that showed introducing cooked whole egg around 4 to 6 months might reduce the risk of egg allergy compared to later introduction. That's not a guideline, but that's just an interesting finding, again, kind of supporting more earlier.
Yeah,
and then it's you know, it's considering the texture and the infant's, stages
of ability to swallow, where they're up to with, you know, purees and, you know, finger foods and all those sorts of things as well, age appropriate. I'm glad to hear that. Both my kids loved eggs, and they were a wonderful, not the first food, but wonderful, one of the first foods for us that they both still enjoy to this day. So it's usually kids are pretty good with eggs in terms of flavor and texture and things like that.
Yeah, and I think it's reassuring, you know, when we know that eggs are so nutrient rich, if kids eat them, like, I don't know, you kind of feel good as a parent, I think.
Absolutely. And they're easy. You know, they're easy as well.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. And you can mash them, or, you know, you can puree them. You can give them as finger foods. They're so versatile in terms of different ways that they can be eaten by infants and kids.
Definitely. So we talked a little bit, you mentioned how nutrient rich eggs are. So what else does the humble egg contain? I love calling it a humble egg, because they're so unassuming, a small package but full of nutrients. Can you walk us through these?
Yes. So one of the key communication messages that we have been working with Australian Eggs over the years is that eggs contain 13 different vitamins and minerals, and we count that number as being in amounts. So there are 13 different vitamins and minerals that are present in an amount that's more than 10% of the RDI per serving, and we refer to a serving of eggs as two eggs out of a standard kind of 700 gram carton. So when we refer to a serving of eggs, so those ones I can rattle them off if you like: phosphorus, iron, selenium, iodine, riboflavin, vitamin B12, choline, pantothenic acid, folate, and vitamins A, D, and E. And that's not to mention the protein, omega-3s, and the antioxidants, lutein and zeaxanthin, which are really useful in terms of eye health.
So aka they are nutritious.
That's it, yes.
They've got lots of good stuff packed into there. I think lots of people would probably be aware of the protein in eggs. I think that's maybe something talked about quite a lot, maybe more in health and fitness circles. But hearing you unpack all those different nutrients, iron and iodine, things that, we know, especially women, are not meeting. I mean, the population in general, but women are not meeting. So fantastic to see that. And I think one of my favorite things about eggs is how affordable they are and how easily accessible they are. In the current cost of living crisis, that's really quite important. They're a really affordable way or cost-effective way to get protein into a meal that the whole family can eat, as we've just discussed. Let's talk about some creative culinary ideas, because this is the practical component. What are some ways that we can help people eat more eggs?
Yeah, so eggs are eaten at breakfast. So I think looking outside of breakfast as a meal, because we've kind of, well, I won't say we've already got covered, because there's different things we can do at breakfast time, but if we can, I think, we often say with eggs, you often put them in the door of the fridge, and you kind of open the door to look what's in the fridge, and the eggs are in the door, so you're not kind of looking at them when you're looking in the fridge.
A great point.
So it's just reminding, it's just a reminder that, they're great for lunch or for dinner or for snacks. So like lunch boxes, of course, eggs are great in cooking. So, something like a savoury muffin could be an alternative to a sandwich or a roll. Certainly egg sandwiches or egg rolls or wraps and so on. But like making a savoury kind of muffin with eggs and, maybe some ham and cheese and chutney or mustard or something, whatever flavours you like. Can be useful. It's easy to kind of make like a sushi egg roll, just whip up egg, put a bit of soy and mirin sauce in it, cook it, and then maybe add a bit of tuna or something, roll it up, and then roll it, with the rice and roll it in to a
Yeah, so
roll.
Including it almost like a filling within the sushi as well, just to bump up the protein. And sushi's a favorite for kids, adults, everyone sort of likes it. So that's a different way of using eggs that I wouldn't have thought about before, actually.
Yes. And I like the idea. There's like an egg tortilla idea, which is you just kind of make an omelette and then put while it's flat in the pan, just put a tortilla on top of the omelette. Press it down so the tortilla sticks to the egg or the egg sticks to the tortilla. Flip it over so then you kind of warm up the tortilla and then take it out and roll it up and have it like a, like a tortilla egg roll.
Yeah, I've seen this on social media. One of the positives about social media is how much inspiration there often is around these kind of quick meal and cooking hacks, I suppose they are. And I have seen this one. I haven't tried it myself, but I've been meaning to, because I think I've always loved a sort of breakfast wrap or at cafes they often do those sort of brekkie wraps with some scrambled egg in the wrap, which is not, I guess, how most people would think eggs on toast, I suppose, the more common way of eating them. But that I have seen that one where you put that wrap on top. So clever and so easy, so it's an alternative of a one pan meal. You mentioned snack ideas a little bit. So we've talked about some muffins and things like that. I mean, just boiled eggs as snacks. That's a great one as well. There are some other snack ideas.
Yeah, boiled eggs are great as a snack idea. And we've just been doing some work around, sports and what do you have, like what could kids have as quick snacks? Of course, boiled eggs are great for protein and, add a cracker or something with it after school. I like the idea of eggs bruschetta. So, like just toasted bread, sourdough, whatever you like, and make like scrambled eggs and then put them onto the toast and top it with a tomato and basil, bit of tomato and basil kind of salad for something, a little bit of a variation on a standard bruschetta. And stuffing eggs too, so like boiling them, cutting them in half, taking the yolk out, mixing the yolk with whatever you like chives or avocado or lime or whatever flavors, just mash it and then put it back
into the little egg white boat, the cooked egg white boat. It's a bit of an old school dinner party trick, I guess. Yes. That's what's coming to mind for me. But it's, there's some great recipes out there for these sorts of things, creative ways to fill eggs. I have seen wonderful recipes for sort of egg dips as well. So kind of mashing that egg up, almost like how you would a sandwich filling if you, like a curried egg sandwich or something like that, but you can make a curried egg dip to have with some, some brown rice crackers or with, some veggie sticks. And it's an excellent source of protein, super tasty as well. Pop it in your lunchbox and it's quite, make it up a day or two ahead. And it's quite a quick and easy one to transport around. We want to help people think about some new ways and creative ways to cook with eggs. So we obviously know the boiled, the poached, the scrambled, even the fried eggs. What are some other things and some other examples of ways we can help our clients cook, I guess, a little bit more creatively with them?
Yes, before I answer that, actually, one of the most researched questions around how to cook eggs is how to boil an egg.
How to boil an egg?
So people, not everybody knows how to boil an egg or I keep on reminding myself, how long do you boil it for to get soft, medium, and hard?
Soft or hard, yes. Yeah. Do you have any tips there for us?
There's still like nuance in boiled eggs. Yes, well, bring the egg to the boil and don't have it boiling too hard, but just simmering. And it's 4 minutes for soft boiled and just 5 minutes for medium and then 8 minutes for hard boiled. So if you want to put your egg in your lunchbox.
Five or eight. That sounds pretty simple. And do you start in cold water? Is that the trick? Do you start in cold water? Yeah. So don't put an egg into boiling water.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, that's right. So it's the timer goes on once the water's started simmering.
Fantastic. You have to remember that one.
So in terms of ideas and inspiration, there's another recipe I love, which is it's a mini egg meatloaf, but you can make it a normal size if you like. But there's a recipe on Australian Eggs website for mini egg meatloaf, which is done in an air fryer. And it's just individual little meatloaf. So you boil the egg and then you make the meatloaf, the meat mixture, and then you put the meat mixture around the boiled egg and then you cook it in an air fryer and you've got a little individual like meatloaf just
and you can just cut through. And I imagine you'd see that cooked egg in the middle. It's a protein punch for sure, which is such a fun way to cook with it.
Yes. There's another really simple, just like salad, kind of could use it as a dinner or a lunch with, serving it with some other veggies. But if you cook peas, like just green peas, so boiled egg again, but cook some green peas with some mint, throw in a bit of feta, kind of mix it up, and some shallots and lemon and olive oil, and then just kind of mash. You know how you can get a fork and you just kind of mash the peas so it's a little bit mushy with those flavors, and just kind of press a dent in the middle and cut the boiled egg in half and put it like in a little nest. It's like an egg in a green nest. that's a quick and easy, really nice kind of idea too.
Yeah, with all those flavors from the pea and the feta and mint and things like that, which is so yummy. I think one of my favorite things to do with eggs, and I think I'm not sure if we've mentioned this yet, but things like frittatas and omelets, such a wonderful way to kind of throw in everything that you've got in the fridge, use up some veggies, you know, you can tailor them to your family's different flavor and taste preferences. If someone prefers, you know, tomato, but someone else doesn't eat it, that's kind of a nice way to incorporate eggs and other flavors. And frittata is one that we do quite regularly at home at the start of the week, and we just throw in a heap of vegetables, I love roasted pumpkin and things like that that go in it. And then it's a great one for lunches. You know, you can kind of portion it up, eat it for lunches with a side salad. And because of the protein from the eggs, it's filling, but then you're also feeling like you're getting in a lot of veggies and things like that. So it's an affordable meal as well. So I think everybody needs to have a frittata recipe or an omelette filling recipe that they can kind of, I always say that's a recipe that I want to make sure my kids know how to cook before they leave home, whenever that's probably a very long time away, but hopefully they can learn, you know, that's simple. It's almost as simple as a stir fry or a, you know, roast. It's a very basic, simple recipe. Doesn't require a lot of cooking skill either. You know, that's something, as you said, the most searched thing is simply how to boil an egg. So there's probably still a little bit of confusion about the timing of things, where it's, those very simple dishes like omelettes and frittatas is a very simple one for someone that may not have a lot of skills or a lot of equipment as well. So that's a great one.
And I think the point, so like in terms of, you know, rather than throwing your vegetables out, like you think about food waste, for example, like if you add an egg to whatever you've got left, like on your point of whatever's in the fridge, like, oh, you know, if I keep these carrots or I don't know, this spinach or something for an extra few days, it's going to have to go out. Like you can use up whatever you've got in the fridge and just add an egg and add herbs and spices or just seasoning or whatever you like to make it tasty, and you're saving, like going back to the kind of cost of living as well, you're saving from throwing out food, but you're making a tasty dish as well. So eggs are just so versatile, and popping them on top of something, like, you know, topping your pasta with an egg, or if you've just got kind of veggies in your pasta to add the protein, or popping an egg in your soup, you know, like cracking it in, stirring it around, eggs just, or on a salad. So, you know, just make whatever your salad and just pop an egg on top and you've got that extra filling power.
I love the idea of the egg drop soup. I have not quite worked out how to do it, but you make it sound very simple. You just kind of whisk it up beforehand and then just sort of pour it into like a boil when a soup, like I'm assuming like a sort of like a clear chicken broth type soup, like an Asian noodle soup or a clear broth, and you sort of just swirl the egg through. Is that the best way to do that?
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, we can't get into cracking too many jokes.
We can't crack too many jokes. That's right. There's too many puns to be had. And I think probably the last tip there is about, you know, for kids, you know, what are some ideas that we can maybe get kids to get a little bit more excited about eggs? I know for my kids, you know, a hard-boiled egg, for some reason, that just doesn't, like they're very young, that's not something that they would eat, but they would eat it maybe a different way. Are there any kind of fun ways that we can incorporate eggs for kids a little bit more?
Yeah, one thing that springs to mind, which is really simple but fun for kids, you know, like they like different shapes and things, is just if you've got any cookie cutters, I don't know whether it's Christmas trees or, you know, shapes or whatever, or even just using a knife and cut out a shape in a piece of bread and rather than putting the egg on top of the toast, you can crack the egg, like put a shape in a slice of bread, pop it in, you know, some olive oil in a frying pan, crack the egg into the hole, and it will create that shape. And so the egg will come out cooked in the
eggs in
toast rather than eggs on toast.
Very fun. I can just see a little heart shape my daughter, my 3-year-old daughter. it's neat as well, because it's like using the bread acts almost like an egg ring, which is fantastic. We have covered a lot of different recipes, you know, from those more simple things like the different ways of cooking or boiling an eggs to omelets and things, then to maybe a little bit more, more gourmet, I guess we could say, with some, I think we talked about peas and mint, and we didn't mention even things like pesto and all those lovely flavors that we can add to eggs. So there should be lots of inspiration. That mini egg meatloaf was a great one. And then of course, fun ones for kids, keeping, stuffing eggs or doing fun shapes. I think there's lots of inspiration here for people to go and use it for yourself. Pass it on to your clients. One of the things as dietitians, we can't assume culinary knowledge. We have to sometimes guide our clients a little bit more through some of those steps in the cooking process. So I loved that idea of just adding one on top of a salad or of on top of pasta. Very, very simple and very nutritious as well. So to wrap up today, what are some or three of the top key messages you'd like dietitians to take away from our podcast today?
I guess that eggs are a nutrient-rich, versatile and affordable food that helps people across all ages and life stages to meet their nutritional needs. And particularly, I guess today we've talked about pregnancy, so highlighting that and being aware of those guidelines that we went through in terms of when to introduce eggs and so on. That it's recommended that eggs be introduced into the diets of infants before 12 months of age, and that eggs are a great source of choline, which is particularly useful in pregnancy and early childhood. So, and that, I guess on that, just being aware that most women and most Australians don't meet the adequate intake for choline. So there's a good need or a rationale for supporting eating eggs to help meet choline requirements.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your time today, Sharon. I really appreciate it. We will make sure that we add a link to more information on egg nutrition, specifically for pregnancy and children, in the show notes. And we'll also link that paper that you mentioned earlier, so people can have a read and learn a little bit more. And of course, a very big thank you to Australian Eggs for supporting today's podcast. Thank you for your time, Sharon.
Thanks, Brooke.
To get all of the links and resources we discussed in this episode, you can go to dietitianconnection.com/podcasts. And if you'd like to support the Dietitian Connection podcast, please leave a review and a rating on the Apple Podcasts app. Tell us what you thought of this episode, what you learnt, and share your guest requests for us to consider for future episodes. We value hearing from you, and we really appreciate your feedback. So please, please hit that review button.